Welcome back to episode 3 of the PigX podcast mini-series focused on niche production. I'm your host, Delaney Howell. Last week we heard whether forms matter in the energy versus fiber discussion. This week we're shifting our focus to the importance of protein in the swine diet. Joining us today is Dr. Laura Greiner, a leader in both the swine industry and research. She'll share insights from recent research focused on nutrition and how protein is essential in swine diets and explains the factors that may lead to variations in protein levels. Plus, she'll offer valuable tips on how producers and veterinarians can collaborate more effectively. Let's start by learning more about Dr. Greiner's involvement in the swine industry.
So I'm currently the director of the Iowa Pork Industry Center and an associate professor here in the Animal Science Department at Iowa State University. I've been in this role for about 6 years, at least at the university level. I've been the director of the center for about 1 year, year and a half now, I guess. So my focus here at Iowa State is really to do teaching at an undergraduate level, as well as extension and research. So prior to Iowa State, I spent about 13 years in the industry. I worked for a company called Carthage Innovative Swine Solutions, and I served as the director of research there. My activities there really involved looking at all aspects of research. So I looked at genetics, nutrition, veterinary medicine or health, as well as general production questions. And that kind of stemmed from going backwards in my timeline, if you will, doing my master's and PhD here at Iowa State, where I looked a lot at nutritional components that can influence pig health. And so I really had a strong interest in livestock growing up. That was my background. And I had an opportunity to join Dr. Staley's lab to look at swine and nutrition. And so that was how I got involved in that, and then built through that program the interest in immunology and health. And so that led me over to Carthage. And then the ability to come back to Iowa State and teach was something that I was quite excited about. I've always enjoyed teaching the next generation and helping people understand why we do what we do and how we do it. And I certainly enjoy communication with producers. And so the ability to do the teaching, both at an undergraduate level as well as an adult learner level, was really exciting for me. So I think I've taken you both backwards and forwards again in that conversation, but that's really how I got involved in my career and my career path.
Thanks so much for sharing that information. I learned something new about you today, Dr. Greiner. As you reflect on the grant you received from the National Pork Board, how does your work align with its goals?
Sure. So a lot of the work that I do currently is around extension. The piece that I work on in particular, from my own research component, is more still on animal nutrition and health and production. But the background that I have with working in a veterinary clinic, essentially, and understanding how producers and contract growers in particular have access to veterinarians, and even how other swine veterinarians work with those other practices, has always been very important and near to dear to my heart. And so I was happy to help Casey and others work on this survey to better understand, how do we reach out to the people where maybe there isn't a veterinarian that's specific to swine in their region that they have access to? How do they get their information? How do those veterinarians who are mixed animal practitioners get information on, you know, even upcoming or new diseases that we see out in the swine industry or new treatments? So all of those things I think are great. So not just from my background, but then also from an extension piece, because today I work with a lot of those independent producers in Iowa. We have a strong interest in having better relationships with our contract growers. And so the more information that we can gather on how to connect all the right dots together to get the pig to the barn and get the pig to market in a healthy and efficient way is important to us.
Perfect. So then as we think about kind of your focus here with protein within the diet, maybe give a little background or context as to why this has been an area that you've been focusing so heavily on.
Sure. So that actually goes actually way back in my portfolio. So almost 20 years ago now, when I joined Carthage, I was involved in leading the sow research activities there that Dr. Aaron Gaines and Dr. Ali and Dr. Connor had started. And that focus really was around sow nutrition. And some of our primary or initial questions focused around lysine requirements and lactation. And certainly lysine is a component of protein. And so I spent many years going through just the basics and the sow side of trying to understand their requirements. Through that time, of course, we also did some work in grow finish and wean to finish to better understand the pig's lysine and other amino acid requirements as they grew and developed. And so when I came to Iowa State, that was just a natural progression in my research to continue that work. Since I have been here, we've continued to do some additional work in other amino acids that comprise protein, both at the sow level and the nursery pig level. And so that conversation within Casey's project was a very fluid and very easy conversation to have based on my background.
Awesome. So as you think about some of the research that you have been doing, why is protein so vital to swine diets? And I know that maybe seems like a really simple question, but I think that's a great place for us to start.
Absolutely. So protein is something that everybody needs. There's different components of feed or anything that people consume. So I tend to relate people and pigs a lot because we are similar in many things. And sometimes it's easier for listeners to think about their own bodies versus even a pig, or, you know, what they put on their plate every day versus what the pig eats in the feeder. But the reality of it is whether it's people or pigs, we're consuming food, and those feeds have different components. We have, you know, fats and fiber, protein, vitamins and minerals. And so pigs or people, we talk about that from a nutritional level and the importance of it. But when we go down to the pig and we think about a wean to finish pig in particular, the primary purpose of raising that pig is to produce protein for human consumption. And typically the protein that most people are consuming from the pig will be the muscle. And so protein is very important in this conversation, because the old adage is true. In many ways, you are what you eat. And so if you're not eating protein, then you can't take that protein in the food and convert it to muscle. And so when we think about efficiency and growth and honestly, even health, without the right nutrients in front of the animal, they're not going to grow and perform in the way that we expect them to.
So then as you think about variation for growth size and maintenance, why is there that variation that we see based on maybe some different protein levels?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a very complex question in many ways, so I'll try to simplify it the best I can. Certainly, one of the easiest places to start is genetics. Different genetics are going to have different levels of fat versus protein in the composition of the animal. And there's a book that many nutritionists use called the NRC. So this is our Nutrient Requirements of Swine book that lays it out in equation form that we can determine based on the composition of the pig, this is how much protein or lysine the animal needs to grow. And so we can think about genetics, we can think about body composition that can influence that variation. Certainly health, as I mentioned, can influence the animal's requirements. We know that there are certain amino acids, so components, again, of protein, that pigs require when they're sick versus when they're healthy to help fight off disease and build those antibodies to protect them. So health and genetics can influence this. Phase of production certainly influences this, as well as feed intake. So when pigs are first weaned, they are not eating a large amount of food. They're also more efficient in how they're utilizing those nutrients. And so we feed a different level of protein in that feed than what we do as the pig gets older. And again, as the pig gets older, they stop putting on as much muscle and they start putting on fat. So just like us, as teenagers, we probably could eat a lot of things and we generally weren't struggling to think about caloric intake and weight gain or unwanted weight gain. But as we get older, our metabolism changes, our body changes, and so does the animal. And so as that happens, the protein requirement in the pig lessens. They're eating more feed and they're not putting on as much muscle. And so we see these changes. So phase of production and feed intake and efficiency all influence that protein requirement. The last piece of that is also just in general, there is natural variation within the barn. So at any given point, right, if we're thinking about a market barn, a barn ready of market pigs, if that barn weight is 250 pounds, we probably have a 25 to 30 pound standard deviation around that, which means I easily have pigs that are 310 pounds. And I probably still have pigs that are 170 to 180 pounds. And those 170 to 180 pound pigs are still putting on muscle. They're still putting it on at a decent level, where that 310 pound pig is definitely in the finishing phase. So it's putting on more fat than it is muscle. And so again, just what I told you about, as you grow and as you develop, you are what you eat. If they're not putting on as much muscle, then they don't need as much protein in their diet compared to that pig that still is. So variation within the barn also plays into this conversation.
A survey conducted by a team of researchers, including you in the swine industry, which we're highlighting through this niche production miniseries, revealed a gap in producers' understanding of pigs' varying protein needs and the reasons for increasing protein to meet growth requirements. As you mentioned, factors of variation play a role. Why do you think some producers may not recognize these differences in protein needs, and how do you recommend managing them?
Well, that's a great question. And I think that's really one of the pieces that makes nutrition confusing. So we've just spent a while here talking about protein. And a nutritionist, most of us don't talk protein. So we talk about the building blocks of protein. We talk about those amino acids. So when I formulate a diet, I'm formulating a diet based on the lysine needs of the animal, the tryptophan needs, those very specific amino acids. And when we formulate diets, we're thinking about the ingredients that go into that diet. And so if I'm running a corn soy diet, that's going to, the protein level in there is going to look a lot different than if I'm talking about a corn soy diet that has added synthetic amino acids like lysine, threonine, and methionine, because those synthetic amino acids are taking away soybean meal. And soybean meal has a lot of protein, but not all the protein in the soybean meal can be used to build muscle for the pig. And so we may have a nursery diet where we might have 21% crude protein, but we might also have a nursery diet that has 18% crude protein, and they both are going to grow the same amount of muscle in the pig if we have formulated them to be correct. And so when we start talking protein, it gets very confusing very quickly, because there's no exact number for different phases of production. And so producers where maybe that's not a fluid conversation they've had with their nutritionist may not fully understand that. The same with our veterinarians. Unless they've had a couple of nutrition classes in their background, some of these concepts may not be the easiest to learn and to follow. And so those are pieces that I would encourage people, if you are curious, to reach out, talk to your nutritionist that's formulating your diets. Even if you're buying feed, if our producers are buying feed from a co-op, those co-ops have nutritionists and they should feel comfortable reaching out and asking those questions. I've seen even in my own background with some of my smaller producers, they'll specifically say, hey, I want to spend an hour with you just understanding how you think about creating a diet. And that's invaluable time with those producers, because the more they're informed, the easier it is to have those conversations or understand what the nutritionist is doing. But again, when we think about a lot of our independent producers and even our mixed animal veterinarians, they have so many things going on in their lives that this is just one more piece of information they're going to have to take time to learn. And so it's a complex conversation to have.
To clarify something you mentioned, you said there's no exact number for different phases of production. Is it similar to how a nutritionist might recommend a person consume 150 grams of protein a day? And as you think about applying that to swine, are you saying there isn't a specific protein level producers aim for in each phase of production?
Yes. So you ask a great question, Delaney, and I should probably clarify. Many nutritionists, we have a minimum protein number that we're after in our diets, but we're not necessarily after an exact number. But what I am after is an exact number of lysine, for example. So remember, lysine is a building block of protein. It's just one amino acid, one component of protein. But I'm going to say I need this pig to have 20 grams of lysine a day. And they're going to need X grams of tryptophan a day. And I can work through all the smaller pieces that make up protein. And I'm going to have very specific requirements or needs for that. But the big number, that crude protein number we talk about, I will only have a minimum, because we think about being very, very specific with our protein needs or our amino acid needs. We imagine a barrel. We use this analogy a lot with our students. If we imagine a barrel, and that barrel is protein and the requirements of that pig, and we think about the staves around the barrel, so each wooden plank around that barrel, we want to maximize each of those staves so that we get the full amount of growth, if you will, that we can make the barrel the fullest that we can. And so each of those staves are the amino acids. And lysine is what we call our limiting amino acid. And so if we don't have enough lysine in the diet, then it doesn't matter how much of the other amino acids I have or how much protein I have total, I will never build more muscle than what lysine is provided in the diet. And so the more lysine we get, or the closest we can get that to being at the right size of the barrel, then the closer we are to optimizing growth. But again, if I have not enough lysine in the diet, then it doesn't matter that protein level at all. I cannot grow muscle. And so it's a balancing act, and it's the nutritionists in the swine industry have done a phenomenal job over the last 20 years of going beyond this conversation of protein as a generality and getting very, very specific into these amino acids, into these staves of that barrel. And in doing so, what we see at the end of this is better use of our resources in terms of feed. We don't maybe use as much soybean meal as we used to. And in result, what we see is less nitrogen excretion into the manure. And then when we think about that, it means there's less land application need for manure, because we are not wasting nitrogen. And protein's not cheap, right? And so we're just trying to make sure that we're always efficient in what we do when we think about formulating diets. And so that's maybe where it gets a little confusing for producers, is that everybody, I think, is very comfortable with the word protein. But when nutritionists start talking, we start going one step deeper into that conversation. Protein is the big piece, building blocks, or I always think of the little toys that my children had where you would link the little plastic pieces together and make chains of of things, that's exactly what amino acids are, right? They're just linking things together to make muscle. And so we think about that as nutritionists. We think a little deeper. And so I think that's where some of that confusion comes from. It's just the terminology and how we think about meeting a protein need today versus that conversation we had 20 years ago.
And so to clarify too, it's not just getting the right amount of protein, it's getting the right type of protein in the diet.
Yeah, so type is one, but it's more the type of amino acid, that type of piece, component of protein is the better word. Because protein type to me refers to soybean meal, it refers to blood plasma, it refers to an ingredient. But when I think of component of protein, I think of those amino acids. And that's correct, Delaney. We want to have the right type of protein so that it's available. But then we also want to have the right components of protein so that we're meeting those building blocks, if you will, to create muscle.
So as you think about the research or work that's been done in this space and maybe the lack of it too, what do you think are some other research areas that are needed or just maybe focus areas from producers?
So certainly when we think about amino acid requirements or those components of protein, there's still work to be done. Over the years, our amino acid companies have done a great job of making more and more amino acids available to us from a synthetic perspective. So today we have multiple amino acids available. So if I go through the list, we have lysine, methionine, threonine, tryptophan, valine, arginine, isoleucine, leucine, and now histidine available. 9 of our 10 essential amino acids. So when we think about that, it creates interesting conversations because, you know, we're starting to think now today in our own group, we're getting ready to do some work on phenylalanine and tyrosine requirements. This isn't something we were able to do very easily 20 years ago when we didn't have these amino acids available to us. In addition to that, though, some of the things that I referenced earlier about this conversation that nutritionists do have a minimum level of crude protein that we want in the diet, it's a very legitimate statement because we know that, especially in grow finished pigs, if I don't feed enough crude protein, I actually can cause poorer feed efficiency in pigs. They will not convert feed as well. And researchers don't know today why that is. We can speculate that maybe there's something in soybean meal that we're taking away from the pig that the pig needs. Maybe it's some other components that we're not seeing because, again, as we put in more of these synthetic amino acids, we're typically taking soybean meal out of the diet. So there's definite needs to understand that as to why the pig has this certain minimum requirement in the diet from a crude protein perspective. So we're thinking, yes, we have lots of work yet to do in the amino acid sectors with some of these amino acids that are further down the line versus then also what we can do as crude protein in general. From a producer standpoint, I think there's many things they can do. I think they can certainly reach out to talk to nutritionists to understand how they make the decisions that they make going into feed, whether that's protein or anything else in the diet for that matter. Certainly if they're working with genetic companies, many of our genetic companies today have what they call a nutrient requirement or nutrient recommendation manual. Or if they don't have a printed manual, they at least have a nutritionist on staff that can talk to you about what they believe their pigs need. I think that's always important for a producer to be informed, to understand, again, what their pigs need versus what maybe other pigs need, so that they can talk to their nutritionist and remind them, hey, I have this genetic type of pig. Are we sure we're meeting their needs appropriately? You know, lastly, from a veterinarian standpoint, those veterinarians that are interested in that, again, I think should reach out to some reputable groups, whether it's at the university, with a genetic company specifically, or even some of our consulting nutritionists and ask questions. You're not going to be an expert overnight, but I think always asking questions and being interested in learning is important. And I think those veterinarians do have that interest. They want to learn. It's just helping them get connected to the right people so that they have those opportunities. And so when we think about extension today and our role, that is one that, you know, that we are considering here is having short nutrition courses that are present for people that are producers or veterinarians, you know, individuals that aren't going to be in graduate school in nutrition, but rather just want to have a little bit of background so that they feel comfortable moving forward in their own businesses.
Dr. Greiner, as we wrap up our time together, is there anything else you'd like to mention?
I think that that's the biggest piece right there is for our producers and our veterinarians that are not comfortable understanding nutrition to reach out to people that can help them. Extension staff, university, faculty, genetic company nutritionists, consulting nutritionists, and ask questions, be engaged, let us help you where we can, and keep abreast if there's opportunities such as podcasts or short courses that they can be engaged in to further their education in that area. Anytime we talk about, I think, any component of pig production, we always can find lots of different scenarios on we might do this or we might do that. And I think one of the classic statements that many of us use is it depends. And nutrition's not immune to that phrase at all. And so it will not be something I think that's going to be a very straightforward answer, but we can certainly help walk it through in a way that will help producers and veterinarians alike learn it in a way that they're happy and comfortable with.
That was such a great conversation. We're so thankful to Dr. Greiner for joining us for this third special episode in this month's four-part mini-series on niche production. But we aren't done yet. Tune in next week for our final episode of this mini-series where we dive into the world of direct marketing. There is so much collaboration and learning to share with all of you, our listeners, and we're excited to keep bringing you along for these conversations about all things swine. Until next week, on this special series, I'm Delaney Howell, and this has been the PigX Podcast.
PigX is a national podcast hosted by the Pig Livability Project partners at Iowa State University, Kansas State University, and Purdue, and supported by the Iowa Pork Industry Center. For more information on the project, head to www.piglivability.org, or to inquire directly with questions regarding the project, email ipic.iastate.edu. PigX, ideas in the swine industry worth sharing.